hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me, running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my countryman, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my countryman, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run it down my countryman, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program. You're on White Resistance Radio .com. Well, that's more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you are on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio. .com. The occupation, or I should say the blockage of Canadian Railway, particularly down near down near Belleville, Ontario. It's the main east-west Canadian National railway line. It also takes carries via rail their passenger trains that go from Toronto to Montreal and Toronto to Ottawa. And it's the main freight line. It's been occupied since Thursday of over a week ago. So we're now into the 11th day. Well, the minister, one of the ministers of Indian Affairs, was down there Saturday. Talked to the Indians for about 8 hours. Things were rather tense and all that. None of that actually didn't come very much. Even he had to admit, well, there is some progress. Wait a second. Progress. The railway line is blocked. What do you mean, progress? The minister is going to take some demands to the cabinet, which is going to be, won't be meeting until Tuesday. So day after day goes by, and the occupation continues. Well, then, there have been impromptu protests across Canada. Some of them blocked access. Some did not. There was one on the only bridge that links the mainland to Prince Edward Island. This is Confederation Bridge. They partially blocked one of four lanes, but essentially the traffic got through. There were some blockages in various other parts of the country and some some nonviolent protests. Well, I have no problem with the nonviolent protests. I mean, I don't agree with what they're doing, but heavens, you know, they've got a right to do it. It's this main. It's this main protest that is the problem, and part of the problem is the lack of will on the part of government at both the federal and the provincial level, and of the police. Now, it was a very interesting statement made by Perry Bellegarde. Now, he's the head of the Assembly of First Nations, or the National Indian Organization, if you want to put it in more conventional terms, and he defended the police. For sensitive policing and policing that seeks to avoid violence and that understands the situation. Now, of course, nobody wants violence, and I'm not suggesting that the police, even though many of these police forces seem to have armored cars and body armor and all that type of thing. I'm not suggesting that anybody should take a machine gun and mow down the Indians, but I am suggesting that the barricades be removed, and you see, this is part of 40 or 50 years of giving these Indians and some others, but mostly Indians, indulgence. A few years ago, they blocked a railway line down near Sarnia, Ontario for almost a week, and the police were bringing them coffee. There were some peaceful protests and campouts, etc. too. But this type of thing just simply encourages more bad behavior. It buys into the propaganda myth put out by the Indian organizations that they are somehow special. Now, they are different, granted, but they're not above the law. They'd like to think they are. There's even this phraseology, which I will not buy into, but they talk about in such Indian man, it's a such and such First Nation. Well, not a nation. A nation is responsible for itself. It is a group of people on a chunk of land that are responsible for themselves and take care of themselves. This is precisely what the Indians do not do, with perhaps a couple of exceptions. They are complete parasites, dependents on the Canadian taxpayer. The federal government alone shovels out over $9 billion a year to Indians. Provincial governments also spend money. There's many pockets and baskets out of which the money comes, Canadian Indians get a very great deal of taxpayers' money. These various reservations, many of them, completely economically unviable. In fact, in terms of human habitation, almost unviable. That's why in northern areas, very tiny, isolated communities of maybe a couple of hundred are often without proper clean water or various other things, because it's very difficult even to get these things to them. Because the only way they're able to do this is because of massive government funding. These economic These communities are often not viable economically, and so to call them nations is to play into nonsense. Okay, now the Mohawks are a much larger group of people. It's the Mohawks of Tiendanega that are blocking the CN rail line. To call them a nation is to suggest they have some sort of sovereignty. Now, they have some sort of sovereignty or ownership over their land. That's true, it's not a situation of somehow nation to nation. But okay, let's play the game. You're a nation. Well, okay, your nation is occupying and disrupting our railway. We're going to consider that an act of war. Now, how do you like them apples? What if we came in and just basically cleaned you out? Well, okay, we're not going to do that. At the very least, at least one approach would be to blockade, if it's viable, the reservation. There's at least one big road, and along that is the railway track. Say, this is a crime scene. Nobody gets in and nobody gets out. So if you need things from the greater society that you claim so much to despise, well, tough. You're not going to be able to get them until we remove our blockade. We'll see who can hold out the longest. That would be one approach. But or even just the threat of that. The most efficacious, of course, would be to simply, in the dead of night, move necessary equipment in and give the Indians there 5 minutes. Look, remove that blockage. It's a big snow plow and other stuff on the railway tracks. Remove it within 5 minutes or we will. And if you interfere, and if you don't get back and give them an area, then then they will be arrested. It's that simple. Very simple. That's exactly what has to be done. Show resolve. Now, apparently, this is funny. One of the news shows, the television channels, I believe it was Global, was down in Tiendanega today. the Indians who were walking the railway track wouldn't talk to them. But various people who were there did talk to them and said, well, they're worried. The eyes of the Canada are upon them, and they're worried about all the anger and the hatred. Oh, wait a second. You're worried about the anger and the dislike Canadians feel. In fact, some of the signs talk about shutting down the Canadian economy. Oh, yes, well, the rest of Canada is supposed to slap on a big smile and say, oh, that's all right. You're the First Nations. Well, no, to the extent that this is from their own government, and I'm not sure whether it is or not. If it is not, then the local government and the Indian police should be themselves removing the barricade. But if they're not, then that means either they are they're in complicity with this occupation and disruption of the railway line, or they don't have any control over their own territory. Either way, it's time for the Dominion government to intervene and forcefully, and make it clear that from now on, illegal occupations of property blockages of transportation, whether it's a road or a railway, will not be permitted. It's against the law. It will not be permitted. Doesn't matter who does it, whether it's social justice warriors or enviro crazies. or Native Indians. There's no special pass just because you're an Indian. But this, of course, would work against 50 years of cultural Marxist ideology, which is victimology, you know. And see, the official story is that the Indians are the victims of colonialism and so on. Well, yes, the Indians were a conquered people. They no longer are in charge. But they never were in charge in the sense of there was an Indian government. There were many, many Indian governments, and power ebbed and flowed back and forth. At some points, a tribe would be dominant in an area, and another point, they might be exterminated. There aren't any members of that tribe anymore. For instance, a group of Indians in southern Ontario called the Neutrals. Well, they're I don't know about being neutral. They're neutered now. They're not around. They're genocided over 200 years ago by other Indians, not by white people, by other Indians. So while the Indians deserve a certain respect and a certain degree of autonomy on their own land, I can buy into that. But they should not be above the law, and that ought to be pushed out there very forcefully. This is what is going to have to be done if we're going to get control of this issue. And this is a huge problem. What cripples Trudeau and his band is that their ideology actually is more on the side of the Indians, and it's not just the Indians. There's quite a lot of what you might call social justice warrior components and radical environmentalists, and the social justice warriors. Their approach is to they want to shut down the entire Canadian carbon industry. In other words, they would take Canada back, I won't say quite to the Stone Age, but I would say take us back to before the 19th century. No burning of coal, because I don't think they discovered coal until the 19th century in Canada. No burning of gasoline. Diesel, or so on. Okay, yeah. What would the big cities survive? Oh, I know. Wind power and solar power. Well, the technology is just not there yet. Oh, what about nuclear? Oh, we can't have nuclear power, can we? No. So theirs is at the very best, a romantic, not in the sense of Valentine's Day, but romantic daydream, utterly impractical. On another level, there is a deep dislike of the free enterprise system and of the Canadian resources, the resource industry. Why? Because it actually makes people wealthy. We're ordinary working people, especially in Alberta, went through periods where they were actually quite well off, became middle, even almost upper middle class through the trades. Now, this kind of annoys professional intellectuals. There's a degree of envy here. There's a lot of stuff going on here, and much of it is not at all nice. Now, these people have coalesced, and this is a good cause. I think among some of them, they don't give a flying flip for the opinions of the hereditary chiefs of the Wet'suwet'en. And here's another problem. The pipeline that they want to, after numerous reviews, inquiries, regulatory hearings and so on and so on and so on, it's been approved. After time wasting and fortune wasting years, it's been approved. It's gone through all the hoops. On board are many Indian bands along its route to the British Columbia coast, for a number of good reasons, one of which that they will get significant financial rents for the pipeline crossing their territory, and something very much in need in those areas, jobs. All good things. The Wet'suwet'en elected leaders are on side with the pipeline. The holdouts are the hereditary leaders. So it's not even the one tribe is against it. They're not against it. They're for it. I suspect that some of the people protesting, the ones who aren't Indians, don't give a flying flip about the internal Indian politics. It is a way to feel self-righteous. I'm with the native people. Yeah, well, that's fine for you to be with the native people, but not if you're blocking something. And again, I don't have a problem if people want to walk around town or assemble in a park or a square and wave signs and chant slogans. That's their democratic right, in my opinion. I mean, I don't agree with their cause, but I don't have to. What makes this all difficult for our trust fund kid prime minister? Is that deep down, he and many of his gang actually agree with these people. They like to shut Canada down. Now, of course, they can't do it. Obviously, they can't and get reelected, but this is the conflict that's going on within. Well, another one of the decisions that Canada is going to have to make, I believe it's actually by the end of this month, and it's going to be a tough one. It is what to do about the new generation five. The G5 for telecommunications. This is the next level. Oh, okay. Well, this will pose a big problem. Anyway, they are under some pressure to go with Huawei, this giant Chinese conglomerate. We've got their CEO in detention here. She's not actually in prison. She's got an ankle bracelet, and she flits from one of her multi-million dollar Vancouver mansions to another with a couple of bodyguards. But her name is Ming Wenzhou. The Americans want her for various fraud charges, and a long, complicated extradition hearing is now creeping its way through the courts. They're a dirty firm. The Americans do not want Canada to go with this technology because it's widely believed that the technology has a back door installed into it. So that essentially the Red Chinese intelligence will be able to find out what you're saying on your cell phone or the data you might be transmitting and so on. Well, that's a real problem. The Americans will not go with it, neither will the Australians and the New Zealanders. The British have adopted a sort of a little bit pregnant sort of approach. They're not going to be using it for the main parts of the communication. Well, Canada, some of our telecommunications companies, I believe one of them is TELUS, is already somewhat invested in Huawei. Huawei has splashed some money around Canada, so that has bought them some friends. And of course, Canada has a fairly active pro-China lobby among some of our businesses. So we are going, at least the official government will be torn between the desire to be on side with the United States in terms of security matters, and our own security and intelligence service and the armed forces have both been very definitive in telling the government not to use this. The Chinese will spy on us. Well, here comes a very interesting report. Huawei stole secrets for decades. The rapid rise of the world's largest telecommunications company was fueled in part by decades of intellectual property theft, American prosecutors alleged Thursday in a sweeping new indictment against Huawei Technologies and CFO Meng Wanzhou. And she's the one we've got in Canada. The Americans would like to extradite her. The new document accuses Huawei of using deception, college researchers operating undercover, and other means to steal trade secrets from six technology companies in the U.S. violating racketeering laws. You know, did Huawei move so fast and move so far because the Chinese are all brilliant scientists? Well, no. They're good copiers. But Huawei, like many other Chinese businesses, shamelessly stole intellectual property from the U.S. And it's also believed Chinese spies stole vital technology from Nortel. Now, Nortel was a Canadian telecommunications powerhouse about 15, 20 years ago. Its stock was riding high. It was doing fantastic things in terms of telecommunications research and technology, and then it crashed. Several of its patents had been basically stolen by the Red Chinese, and the great stock collapsed, and Nortel was broken up and went out of business. Many Canadian pension funds and many Canadians who'd invested in what was considered a safe stock, this was not a penny stock or a highly speculative item, lost a lot of money. Well, this was done, this was the result largely of Chinese industrial espionage. And people sometimes think of espionage more in terms of sort of James Bond, poor nations trying to get some vital military secret. Well, of course, that does occur. that does occur, but the main form of espionage, and probably the most vital in today's world, is the theft of technology. It saves another country years of research that they might actually not be able to duplicate, and it gives them their companies an advantage. They don't have to put all the money and the time into costly research and development, which might not lead them to where we have arrived at the end of the day. They can skip all that, steal the technology, and forge ahead. That's pretty good if you can pull that off. Now American prosecutors have made some very significant charges against Huawei. The charges filed on Thursday allege that, as well as trying to covertly evade U.S. sanctions barring commercial relations with Iran, it did the same thing in selling products to North Korea. It also charges that Huawei helped the Iranian government with surveillance technology used to monitor the 2009 pro-democracy protests in Tehran. Meng Wanzhou is accused of fraud by deceiving U.S. banks about Huawei's close ties to another company that did business in Iran contrary to the sanctions. And the indictment says that cites several cases that have come to light. The new indictment says Huawei violated confidentiality agreements, recruited rival company employees, and used professors and other proxies at research institutions to pilfer manuals, source codes, and other secrets. In doing so, it violated the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, or RICO, at legislation aimed at prosecuting ongoing criminal organizations. And the indictment says, as a consequence of its campaign to steal this technology and intellectual property, Huawei was able to drastically cut its research and development costs and associated delays, giving the company a significant and unfair competitive advantage. Among the companies that were penetrated were Cisco. Another allegation seems to connect to Motorola, company number two, that a relative of Huawei founder Ren Zhengfei, who worked for the American firm, handed over technology to Ren's company. You see, one of the security nightmares are the large number of red Chinese students, scientists, and so on in the United States and Canada, in many of them in key technology areas where there is a sort of an academic understanding or of being honest that you don't steal what you may have access to, but we cannot make that leap of faith when it comes to many people from China. I'm not saying everybody, but many. Many Chinese have a sense of loyalty, not to our country, but to the Chinese motherland. So this is a huge problem. Let us switch from North America. We're moving now to Germany, and a particular interesting insight into democracy, German style. Merkel's party, now that hers is the governing Christian Democratic Union. Merkel's party condemns election of far right district mayor. The party in question is one of the two big nationalist parties in Germany, the NPD, the National Democratic Party. Stefan Jasch is now the mayor of Altenstadt Waldislung. It's part of the village of Altenstadt. Meanwhile, Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer, the leader of Merkel's Christian Democratic Union, said on Sunday the election of a far-right NPD party member, Stefan Jasch, to the small Hesse town of Altenstadt Waldsiedlung needs to be reversed. Listen to that. According to the up-and-coming, actually, I think she, this story is a couple of weeks old, she's actually dropped out as up-and-coming leader, or leader-to-be, this Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer, but she's a member of the Merkel's Christian Democratic Union, and a senior member. Listen to this again. She said that the election of far-right party member Stefan Jasch to this small town in Hesse needs to be reversed. Needs to be reversed. The German news agency reported that Jasch was elected unanimously recently after the post remained vacant for several weeks. And the Associated Press story continues. Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer, the leader of Merkel's Christian Democratic Union, or CDU, said late Sunday that the election of far-right NPD party member Stefan Jasch needs to be reversed.
The Act was elected unanimously on Thursday after the post remained vacant for weeks. Local CDU member Norbert Schelasco, who also voted for Yacht, said the council elected him because we don't have anybody else, especially nobody young, who knows how to use computers and send emails. Lawmakers of other mainstream parties also expressed shock. The NPD is known for its openly anti-immigrant stance. Now, this story, as you know, you scratch your head and say, you know, did what exactly what exactly what exactly do they think democracy means? I don't know. A person is duly elected in a democracy, and they want to reverse that. Why? Well, they don't like his views. Oh, fair enough. But that is what a real democracy is. It is that the voters are always right, and you may not like the results, but they're right, and they of course they'll have a right to change their selection in the next election if they feel that they made a mistake. That's what democracy is. And the idea is that, well, you made the wrong choice. Okay, we're going to reverse the results of the election. It's basically just unacceptable. But, you know, there's a totalitarian streak in the German left-wing political establishment. They have tried repeatedly to ban the NPD and other right-wing parties. And sometimes with some success, but almost each time this is tried, it comes a cropper. I'll tell you why. It turned out that in one previous occasion, the government, the German government, had infiltrated some people into the NPD, and they were the ones doing some fairly questionable things. So wait a sec, it wasn't the NPD; it was a government agent. Well, still on the matter of China, or Red China. Trump's war on Red China gets hotter. This is a recent speech, it was very hard-hitting by U.S. Attorney General William Barr. And that speech was about 10 days ago. He makes a case for an all-out economic war on China's Huawei to block the tech giant's global 5G expansion. In a speech filled with sensational language, Barr called on America's allies to join what amounts to an international strategic offensive against Huawei. If the military goes on to say that Barr's comments delivered to the U.S. Justice Department's China Initiative Conference in Washington, among the other comments he made, we are now in a new era of global tension and competition. China has emerged as the United States' top geopolitical adversary based on competing political and economic philosophies. And Attorney General Barr went on to say, make no mistake about it, China's current technological thrusts pose an unprecedented challenge to the United States. When we have faced similar challenges in the past, such as in World War II and Russia's Cold War technological challenge, as a free people, we rallied together. We were able to form a close partnership among governments, the private sector, and academia, and through that cooperation, we prevailed. If we and our allies and other countries that do not want to put their economic fate in China's hands are not going to install Huawei's infrastructure, We have to have a market-ready alternative. The time is very short. We and our allies have to act quickly. While much has to be done, it is imperative to make these decisions right away. And I entirely agree with him. The Huawei technology basically allows America and Red China to spy on us. Well, this is Paul Prohm. I'm going to take my musical break now, and we talked all fairly late in this broadcast about politics in Germany. So, seems like a good idea to play some German drinking music. Now, this is Paul Prohm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio, or rather, AltRightTV.com.
Thank you.
Paul Muro, the Funny Sodomy, back with you again tomorrow here on AltRightTV.com. Sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave, our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and